Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. My name is Raj Baines. I will be your host for today. Joining me is Mr. Sebastian Stafford Blaw. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Mr. Raj Baines. Thank you for having me on.
That's the first time you've ever addressed me with any sort of respect.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a slightly more formal podcast. You know,
excellent.
For change. Yeah, why not?
Oh, I like that.
Change of pace.
Well, it's been a while now. We're virtually fucking strangers, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to shine your shoes before you'd let me speak to you.
No.
Look you in the eyes.
Exactly.
How have you been for the past 21 days, I think it's been, since we last recorded?
Happy. Much more content, generally. Yeah, just happier. I'm fine, thank you, mate. Yeah.
Filling in your time with sort of work and play and all that business.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I bet you're happy the nonsense rugby's on. The Six Nations?
No, I'm not really into England rugby. I like club rugby and I like watching the Lions, but England's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit different. It's kind of the difference between like club football and England football. It just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't do it for me really.
It's full of cons.
The stadium is, I don't like sports events where people go to them and their main objective is not to watch the actual event. And I Twickenham is, I don't know, it's a very, very strange place. And it's not
it's
really...
It's full of Tarquin networking, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, it is quite networking, but it's actually, it's not as full of as full of that kind of person as assumed. It's kind of a, I don't know. I mean, whilst a lot of those people are into their rugby, it seems to be full of people who aren't into their rugby and who are there to eat and booze and to, yeah, as you say, network. And I don't know. I mean, I like, you know, a club ground's obviously, you know, the seats are right up close to the pitch and there's only 8,000 people in the ground and, you know, it's just, and it's also 15 minutes walk from my house.
There's only 8,000 people in Bath though, isn't there?
70. So it's kind of a healthy proportion of the population goes to rugby. But it's just a different atmosphere. It feels a bit like Bath is for everyone and Twickenham is just for people that can afford to spend 180 quid on a ticket. And
is that how much it is?
It can be. I mean, I haven't been for a very long time to England, so Jesus. I can't be sure, but I've heard.
Don't they do that tailgating nonsense as well, where they take like picnic out and get Prosecco going before game?
No, it's not done by the fans that really. It's kind of, there are like sort of, companies that set up stall outside the ground, and it's a bit like this is a good, you've been to the O2, it's a bit like a sort of an outdoor version of the concourse there. It's very meh, you know.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's like that. Okay. Not really what I like in my sport, to be honest.
No, I don't think you're not gonna find me sticking up for rugby union, so.
Yeah.
You're in a safe space here.
Yeah.
How's life been generally away from sport? Because obviously we spend so much of our time worrying about this sort of thing. We'll get onto it, I'm sure. But you know, you're keeping yourself well.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I
any January blues or anything?
No, not really. I mean, I'll be honest. I need to start spending a little bit more of my time away from sport because I kind of Yeah, I don't get to do many things which aren't involved with work or football anymore, which is a great privilege, of course, but also can take its toll a little bit. Sort of the hours on the train and the late nights and the cold press boxes and stuff. You kind of, it comes at a price eventually. I mean, you do.
You got yourself a pair of long johns.
No, but I was at Waterloo Station the other day, and I bought myself a really big pair of woolly socks, and it was one of the best things I've bought in months. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that.
Long johns are a good purchase. I put them on before I go to the stadium, because otherwise, when you sit there for 90 minutes, wind chill gets through you. It's not just sort of, because you're not moving, you just sort of sat there in your own muck and what have you. They're a good idea. The more layers you have on, the better.
Layers are your friend, without question. Yeah.
Especially when sort of my ankle as well gets troublesome if it's too cold. So I put two pair of socks on as well, and that keeps it all happy and all under wraps. So it's that's good. Jack's not here. He'll be upset that it's taken us 5 minutes to mention him. He'll be worried, what? He'll have had some sort of existential crisis in this 5 minutes, thinking, are they going to mention me? Have they forgotten I exist? I'm the reason this show exists. I'm the only reason people listen. No, he's been busy at work, bless him. He's got loads on at the minute, as happens to him periodically. I think people just think he tweets shit for a living. But he
sort of does, doesn't he?
Well, he does. but in a non-character-based capacity. There is, somewhere in there a professional voice, which is why he plays out so much. Anyway, we should probably talk about football, since that's why we're here, apparently. We've not, as I said, talked for 21 days. If we go back to Manchester City, this is a 2-2 draw. It's the last game we previewed. Went 2-0 down, managed to come back to 2-2. Kyle Walker gave the greatest push of all time, which still makes me laugh. I think we deserved to lose by about 10, didn't we?
I mean, when Kevin De Bruyne scored, I just thought this is going to get ugly really, really quickly. And also, it wasn't even one of those games where we went 2-0 down and then somehow we kind of seized control out of nowhere. It wasn't like that at all. It was the same game. It's just that we had two shots on target and they both went in. It was an extraordinary game of football. It was great fun to watch. It was a very entertaining game, but we were an absolute mess. It's one of the worst big game performances I've seen from a Poch team for a year or two. Really poor.
It was an absolutely
I've seen City since with Jesus at the top of the formation, but even with Aguero, they just look lethal, and it doesn't surprise me that they
That fucking
just like, really slumming it. It's like he's there, Vincent Janssen. It was terrifying to watch, because not only did they play very well, but usually we're pretty good at playing our way out of our own third, as everyone knows. But for whatever reason, even the most reliable ball players among them, like even Alderweireld was sort of scuffing passes to Raheem Sterling, and it was chaos. Good recovery.
Still though, I was going to say Manchester City only scored twice because we let them. They weren't brilliant goals.
The first goal, we gave the ball away really badly. What I will say in Lloris's, no defence of the second goal, but the first goal, they watered the pitch quite heavily at half-time. And I don't know if this came across on TV, but when that ball came through over the top and Sané was chasing it, it stuck a little bit in the turf, and it probably didn't come through to Lloris at the speed that he was expecting. And still a fuck up, of course, but I had a little bit of sympathy for him for that.
I actually think, because I watched it so many times, sort of when you watch a game and then you watch highlights and sort of Sky will play it 50 times just to make sure you've got the message. He could have cleared that by just heading it straight forward, but he was being too clever and he tried to glance it across to his man, but in doing so managed to head it straight onto the arm/chest of Leroy Sané. So it wasn't as if he'd missed a header. It wasn't a complete fuck-up. He just tried to be too clever for his own good.
Yeah, maybe.
Which I think is, it's still a mistake. I'm not trying to sort of dig him out of it, but if you actually watch the way his head moves and sort of even watch him as he runs up to the ball, he takes a glance to his side and he is thinking, oh, I can get out of this and make it look good by heading it across. Only Sané's so quick that he's managed to intercept it and he's away.
Visually, it didn't look right, of course. I don't know what he was trying to do. I mean, maybe he was...
Oh, no. In real time, I thought he'd completely missed
the ball.
He
didn't, did he? Had it against him. Yeah, that's what I thought. I don't know. I mean, it was... Lloris is obviously so far in credit that it doesn't really matter.
It's worth mentioning.
We wouldn't even been in the game.
It's
not an exaggeration to say we should have been 4-0 down at halftime. They were that much better than us and we were that poor.
It was one of the most painful halves of football I've seen Tottenham.
The kind of, you know,
for
six different
time.
Nails in Kevin Vimmer's Tottenham coffin. That half, that was just... and he shouldn't
He hasn't been seen since.
I mean, I'm not trying to be smug and neither of us are trying to be because we both lobbied against this. He should never have started that game just because he doesn't work in that position. He's a centre-back who belongs in a two, should we say. He doesn't...
Yeah, I mean, there's no taking away how well he filled in for Jan Vertonghen last year, but it's it was a completely different system.
He can't cover that amount of space,
right?
He's not mobile enough. If you're the left-sided centre-back in a three, you've got an awful lot of ground to cover, and he's just not... No, it's not really.
It's not really playing
centre-back, full-back hybrid, I guess.
And you can get away with sort of...
He's a much better footballer as well, Vertonghen.
And the same goes with Eric Dier on the other side.
He's
played both right back and centre back, so we couldn't really have a much better blend when at full strength to play that formation. I actually think that we'll come on to games, you know, that have come later on, but I actually think that formation now might be our strongest because when we play the 4-3-1-2 or 4-2-3-1, that axis of Wanyama and Dembele is fantastic at stopping the opposition and sort of keeping the ball and channeling it and sort of, you know, ferrying it in between. But they're not quick enough at distributing it, and we don't get it to the dangerous positions near enough, quickly enough for the people in those positions to do what they need to do in the most sort of disastrous ways that they can. And it slows us down a lot. And I'm not saying they shouldn't play together. Perhaps it should be something we look at in a 4-2-3-1 because that's when it does cause the most problems. Even though individually they're good, systematically it sort of there's a knock-on effect. Whereas when you've got the two fullbacks almost pushed up into midfield positions, it gives them far more leeway to just give the ball wide or give the ball forward. And there's so much more space and pace in that final third already there and waiting
I had a bit of a think about this a couple of weeks ago, and it seems to be a sort of an instance of the more access points, the more exit points that you provide for a team when they have the ball in their own defensive areas, the better, especially now that kind of like high pressing is so in vogue in the league, especially in the, you know, against the bigger teams. If you're playing against a back two and fullbacks who are quite shallow, then really your only way of moving up the pitch without, you know, playing direct balls or long diagonals, which invariably get gobbled up by centre backs, is to go through Dembele in our team, because he's really the only one who's actually good enough on the ball. This is on the assumption that Eric Dier isn't playing in midfield. But he's the only one who can actually come deep, collect it, and then be trusted to, you know, pivot around someone or bring somebody else into play. And I think over the course of the last 6 months, probably on the basis of what happened last season, opposition managers are becoming better at targeting Dembele. And I don't know, that seems to affect, like you say, the pace at which the ball goes forward. Whereas if you have three centre-backs, you know, fullbacks who are pretty wide and, you know, obviously Dembele and a Wanyama in midfield, that's an awful lot of ground for someone to cover. You know, even for Liverpool, who like to press with five or even six, you got to get it absolutely right. Otherwise, it's pretty easy to skip through your press with that amount of players and that amount of ball players as well, because you've got Vertonghen, obviously good on the ball. Dier's got a good passing range. Alderweireld is exceptional with the ball at his feet generally. And then Rose and Walker, who sort of naturally, very hard to kind of cut off the angles to them if they're that high. Good.
Yeah, I agree. The next game, Wigan.
Nor did I.
I didn't actually see this one until I saw the sort of extended highlights later on. I was at Spotland.
Rochdale,
Rochdale.
I promised my girlfriend a day without football, so I didn't see that at all.
Oh, well, you missed that a great day at Spotland. the pitch was so shit that Huddersfield couldn't play football, and for half an hour, Rochdale looked like they were going to win, and then Town went ahead sort of last 5 minutes of the first half, tapping because they're morbidly obese goalkeeper, to be quite frank. Miskicked, went straight to Izzy Brown, I think, and he laid it across to Kanar, who's making his debut. But what David Wagner did at halftime was he just went, we can't play on this pitch, it's shit. So he brought on his centre-back up front, and the centre-back's got twice. So it was a good day out. But yeah, all the way through that game, though, the sort of the two people behind us had bets on, I think. And I think this happens to us so many times where games get spoiled because people have got bets on and discussing them. So rather than checking my phone, I was just listening into
you stayed away from the results
in the stand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I normally do check them, but I hadn't really. But knowing those two were behind me, sort of gabbing on, I just let them go at it because I knew I'd pick up, you know, they were filtering through every now and then. And when you're at the game as well, announcer tends to read out on at half time and stuff. So I knew that Tottenham weren't in a good way. And when I heard that sort of Wickham went two up, I was questioning what was happening because sort of Carter Vickers had started at the back, Vaughan was playing, Wimmer was playing, wasn't he? So I weren't exactly sure what had gone wrong. And then when we got back to 2-2, I thought, oh, this will be fine now. And then they went 3-2 down. I was like, hang on a minute, this could be embarrassing. And then they won it in the last minute. And we'd actually left the ground at this point. And we were just walking past some people in a car, and I think they had the radio on, and someone just went, oh, fucking hell, Tottenham have won. And I started laughing, like properly howling. And Sykes just looked at us like, you're a jammy cunt, you. So I don't know. But how was your experience of the game?
Not really until right at the end, and yeah, she does. But the thing is
football,
that because... I go away a lot for football. That concessions have to be made, and she's gone to visit her parents for a few weeks. So I promised a couple of weekends of no press box and no football on TV. And so we were actually walking around a bookshop, and I went on to live score, and it was 3-2 to Wickham, and I just thought, oh, fuck off, and turned it off. and then we were walking in town, and we went past, I think it must have been a bookies. And they had the the Vidi printer on Soccer Saturday on Sky. Yeah, I saw that, and I saw Tottenham 4-3 through the glass. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I did. I had a little bit of
chuckle to yourself.
You know, go modern football moment, which I got shouted at a little bit for, quite reasonably. I did. I've said to Jack before on this pod that. That I quite enjoy, at least when it suits me, quite enjoy a lowly team being put in their place. I know how that makes me sound, but I just do. Sorry. I kind of, the crueler the better, actually, because I think Gareth Ainsworth, by all accounts, from everything I've ever heard, is a lovely chap, but
Sort of one of them who'd try and have a conversation with like young lads in the pub to prove he's cool though with the way he dresses and his
apparently he is quite legitimately cool, and also a pretty good player, Gareth Ainsworth, in his day. I have to say I saw him play a few times, and he's still got his winger's hair as well, which is good. But sadly for him, no dice.
Yeah. Who have we got in next round?
Fulham away. Yeah. Which is a great place to watch football, Craven Cottage. So I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah, because I was wanting... every time we have a draw, I always want Tottenham and Huddersfield to get into it. Huddersfield got Manchester City at home. So there'll be a great manager from Germany against Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Which is always good. Huddersfield are going to win that.
Not really. Yeah, not really into my football betting anymore. No. Yeah, I got a bit bored of it. I'm not really into betting generally.
I went on a right run over Christmas.
Oh, nice. What, do you have a big accumulator?
I only put a tenner on. It was, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I only had like an eightfold on. But the last game on the first one was that Roma Juve game at Juve. And it was 1-0 Juve, and Roma absolutely fucking battered them for that entire second half. And I was just hovering over that cash out button.
What was your cash out option?
Like, no, you've come what was the value? Just leave it. I think it was about like 80 quid less or something like that. It was still over 100 quid, but like...
Nervy few minutes, that.
Yeah. Roma absolutely fucking battered them, and I swear I've never been more into a game that didn't involve Tottenham in my life. I was genuinely fucking... Yeah, it was horrible. We had dinner as well halfway through it. That was the worst thing. So it was just after half time. We were going to have dinner, so I had to put my iPad away in that, no TV on or whatever. And when I went back, I was like, oh, they're going to be fucking losing or something. I can't have my phone at the table. I can't be sat there with fucking betting app open on phone while we're having dinner. That's not right. So I had that nervy minute where I'm fucking wolfing my food down. Like, can I be excused, please? Belting it back upstairs to watch game and whatnot. But now they got out of it. And next one after that, I put it on and I forgot about it. And when I came to end it game, I sort of looked at it and
everyone nicely done.
Like, oh, happy days. Rarely ever happens to me where I get two back to back. It was especially during Christmas and New Year when you've got Christmas to pay for and then tax one comes calling in January.
Last week, that one, wasn't it? So, I hate paying tax.
Oh, fuck me.
It should do. I hate it. Obviously. But it's,
I hate it.
Yeah, not a good day. It's kind of the only day of the year when I regret being self-employed. Because that's it. Yeah. You just, you feel richer than you really are. And then you get to January and you think, oh, God.
And you just sit there on that depressing screen, clicking next, 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 until you're like, can you just show me the figure that you're going to steal from me now, please?
You wait till the tax man sees my deductibles next year. Fuck you. Payback time, boys.
I never put any on. I'm too lazy for any of that. I just make it up and sort of, I put in one figure. I don't even itemize it. I just put in one foot.
So when you disappear for 6 months in the middle of a pod season, you'll have been done for tax
when they audit me.
Okay.
No,
it's a better option. You get the rebate, but it takes a long time to get it. But
yeah, I always end up getting some back. But I can't be arsed fucking sitting there all day. It's like, this is painful enough without fucking making me go step by step through what you're going to make me.
I've got a big bag of receipts.
Talking about painful, Sunderland away 0-0. Jesus. There's nothing to say about the game because nothing happened in the game. It's one of I think I tweeted after the game that when I'm on my deathbed, I will be thinking about the 90 minutes that I wasted of my life watching this. It was abysmal. We couldn't create anything. There was one Wanyama header that he should have scored where we may have done a smash and grab. They were happy for their point. Like they had no ambition to do anything else. It was one of the
I was covering Bournemouth Palace that night, so I missed it. I was following it on Twitter, and it's just a much better way of following bad Tottenham games than actually having to watch them, because you're left with the comments, and I will never watch that game just because it can't possibly be as bad as it's imagined now in my mind. Because if I remember one point Jack saying that he quote despised Ben Davis, it's just such vitriol. I was just sitting there 90 minutes and just different people. Yeah,
you know what, I've got a when we talk about the next
game, don't talk about Sunderland.
Heung-min Son, we'll come on to him, but Heung-min Son had a really good game against Borough. And I actually think one of the effects of that is that he has far less defensive work to do because Ben Davies hangs back and he's not having to sort of share his attacking workload on the left. And he doesn't trap back nearly half as much as he needs to when sort of Danny Rose is there. that freedom he gets almost as a knock-on effect of Ben Davies not getting forward as much as he should gave him an extra bit of freedom to be good. And maybe that's me reaching, but I genuinely think that is a contributing factor to why
I think
he had such a good game. Because he was a standout.
If you take away the need for him to do any work without the ball, then it's generally a much better situation for everybody, because like if you need him to defend, he'll always let you down. But then I suppose the counterpoint naturally is that, you know, in a game that mattered when everyone was available, Ben Davies is never going to start ahead of Danny Rose. And so I just don't think you can. Well, look, we're infringing on. Yeah. Okay. He did play well. He did. He had a few. I thought he played quite well. I thought he was a little bit wasteful.
What did you make of the Borough game in general? Because I think it was another one of those matches where it showed that we had one of our main creative outlets.
I thought we were quite bad, mate. I mean, I didn't think that we moved the ball well enough. And I think what it showed is the problems that are created when we lose Rose, when we lose Vertonghen as well. I think it sort of the whole left side.
Just to give you an idea of how bad we were against Sunderland, that Middlesbrough performance was about 600% better. Which shows you sort of we needed a penalty to get past a shit team, and we couldn't even do that.
In fairness, the Borough game, to the Borough game, even to the performance, we did need a penalty to get past them, but we should have scored a couple. I mean, like, our attacking phases were really chaotic and muddled. It was a bit strange to watch. And I think that there's sort of, you know, Son did play quite well, but there were a couple of times in the first half, especially when he made some pretty poor choices. That chance when he went near post instead of, you know, either hitting the target or dragging it to the far post.
There was one where he got through one-on-one and he's left-footed, so he tried to hit across the keeper, which gave Valdez... He gave himself a much smaller area of the goal to aim at and gave Valdez a much easier save on the floor. When if he wraps his foot around it and starts the ball outside of the post and puts it in that way, Valdez has got much less of a chance of saving it, and he's got, you know, increases his ability to hit the target untold amounts. And he seems to struggle with easy chances, unless it's like a tapping or something. He doesn't score those, but when it's sort of an almost difficult one where he's got to not just put his mind to it or think about it, but he's got to sort of go through his process a bit more rather than just snatching at it, he does far better.
Well, Stoke away is a really good example
sort
of
that. Scoring
that chance that, well, the first one,
but he scored a couple of belters.
Okay, but the second one was a great goal, and but it was just, it was a ridiculous chance to take on from that. I mean, it wasn't a particularly acute angle, but just in terms of its difficulty, there aren't very many players who can do that. And there are even fewer who would take that first time from that distance with the options that were around him. It was, great finish. But having said that, look, the sequence which led to the penalty was almost identical, almost in area as well, to the to the one he won against West Ham. I mean, I think Bernardo was the defender. He just fell for exactly the same trick, which is just ridiculous. Like, I mean, if you were his manager, I think you just punch him in the dressing room, because, lovely footwork, well done, but come on.
Having heard stories about Carranca, I don't think that's far off.
Just bizarre defending. But, you know, it was worth 3 points, so good for him. Son rather than Bernardo, of course.
What do you make of the rest of the performance? I think we touched on it. We sort of had a discussion about the difference in formations, especially with Danny Rose missing and we're not having the confidence in Kevin Wimmer to play three at the back.
I don't know.
Would it be a game sort of... The one thing that sort of... I never ever want to give Tim Sherwood credit.
Careful.
But the one thing he did was he was so simple that the generic way he set up the team against shit teams just sort of put it out there as let's see who's got the better talent on the field. And sort of there was no tactics to it. It was almost sort of
you know, we've got the better players, we'll score more goals, basically.
Yeah, because he put two up top. which, you know, is horrific to watch most of the time. He didn't have a natural balance to the team. He'd have sort of Chadley in defensive midfield, Sigurdsson on the wing, Christian Eriksen playing right back. Yeah. It was a complete... Kyle Walker, wherever he had him that one time. Yeah, he completely fuck about. Kyle Norton playing centre-back. But because we just had the better players on the field and they'd been given no other instruction than to go out and win the game, they would. So my question would be, is there some value in not overthinking home games against shit teams and just going balls out and going, you know what, we're going to put Janssen and Kane up top. We're going to have, you know, our inside forwards playing high up. We're essentially going to have four forwards on the field and we're going to fuck you up. Because I think Ferguson used to do it, I think. Because I don't think Ferguson against those teams was sort of thinking he was a tactical genius. I mean, one of his greatest talks ever was, lads, it's Tottenham. So maybe there is some value in not overthinking opponents that don't deserve.
Well, I have a theory on this, in that I don't believe that sort of, I think we overstate the importance of formations in that kind of game. I think obviously shape is important, but on the basis that sort of a formation in, you know, Pochettino's team is quite a fluid concept anyway. We're not a rigid side really, but I think sort of against a Middlesbrough, a side essentially who, as they have done at, as they did at the Emirates, as they did at the Etihad, and successfully, we should add, earlier in the season. I think what really matters is the conviction within the players and the chemistry that they're able to generate within the game. Because, you know, you can have all the shape you want in those kind of games, and you can create all the sort of the micro advantages in different areas of the pitch and the numerical mismatches. Ultimately, if you don't move the ball with proper purpose, it's not really going to count for anything, because if the ball doesn't move quickly enough, a unit like that, and Borough can defend. I mean, I know they struggle going forward and they're low in the table, but they really can defend. Yeah, and for good reason too.
They've got one of the best defences in the league.
They're very well organised. And so...
That's how they played in the Championship as well. It's not as if they romped through that league. They just had better forward players than everyone else, they were well set up. And because they'd invested so much money in that squad, that's what allowed them to get up after so many failed attempts, is they just, you know, in a very Sherwood manner, they just had more money on the field than anyone else.
They're hardly a pauper team either, because, okay, they are newly promoted, but at the same time, they've got a Champions League winner playing goal for them. They've got a very settled...
He's not going to be on that.
They are a very decent defensive unit. So in that scenario, the sort of... what you can't allow for is the kind of the little hesitations which manifest when players are slightly off form, like a kind of a bobbly touch from Kane, a bit of hesitancy from Eriksen, or, you know, and if you add into that situation Danny Rose's absence, and you remove the ability to actually penetrate the lines and, you know, get to the byline on one side of the field, it matters far more the kind of the, I suppose... I don't want to reduce it to something like being positive, because that is just a Sherwoodism. But essentially that, you kind of, you have to have a little bit of swagger when you play those teams at home. It's less, every Premier League game has to be thought through and it needs a certain tactical approach. I completely appreciate that. But I think more so than against Manchester City away or Man United or Old Trafford, I think it matters, you know, mentally how you approach that. And actually, I thought we were a bit disorganized and I thought we were a bit wasteful, but I thought we were pretty good against in that side of things, against Borough.
Yeah. It's almost comparable to, you know, when you're on a night out and you see a lad who's getting a lot of attention.
No, I haven't had a light
sort of, you'll see
like
the type of lads who'll spend.
So I don't.
if you cast your mind back a few decades, Seb.
To the speakeasies,
You know, you see... Yeah. There's a live band playing in the corner and there's line dancing. Not line dancing, ballroom dancing.
No, I didn't.
You didn't grow up in the South. Anyway, you know, when you're out and you see a lass who's getting a lot of attention, you'll see there's lads who sort of try and take like a more steadied approach and they'll go in for a conversation or... they'll be sort of clever about it, but they're not the ones who'll take her home. It's the chav in the corner who's had 20 pints, goes up and slaps
their ass. We need to walk up to them and slap their ass.
Maybe you just need to be modder. Yeah, I mean, that's not something I would comment on.
No, but in
a
football mentality.
More of the first example. But in comparison, that sort of lack of subtlety and sort of that heavy-handed approach, maybe, you know, what would be better, I'm not sure. I mean, the one Sherwood game I saw live at Newcastle away, there was no structure to Tottenham. There was nothing planned, but because they had players on the field and Adebayor felt good about himself because he got to do a salute to a dickhead.
And
he scored a couple of goals. Chadley scored a worldie.
Well. I mean, to be fair.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, we could make Middlesbrough look hopeless given the talent we have on the field. But maybe because we treat them with the same respect we give to top-tier sides, they get away with it a little bit more. I'm not sure. Because Middlesbrough have done that job
on
other top teams.
They made Arsenal look very, very blunt. They did the same for Man City. You know, when they play other... I mean, they don't get fucked 5-0 every week. I mean, weirdly, they were by West Ham, or 3-0 a few weeks ago, 3-1. But they're not, they're very rigid. And I don't know, I just think sort of, it's not like playing, it wasn't a game like playing Swansea a few weeks ago or Bournemouth at the Lane or, you know, those kind of sides who you know that first of all, they doubt even their own ability to come out of that game with a clean sheet. Middlesbrough don't. They set up to do that. Their entire game plan is seems to be away from home at a ground like Watt Lane seems to be predicated on we're not going to concede a goal and we're not going to do much up the other end. But that's okay because we have this deservedly high regard for our own abilities in our own half. That's fine. I mean, but I don't with a Middlesbrough type game winning 1-0 against that kind of side is just in my eyes it's always fine because. Jack always,
especially in this half of the season,
for saying things like this, and he's quite right to. But like 5 years ago, we lose that, we don't get the goal, and then Negredo hits one in off his arse or something. It's like the Sebastian Larsson goal.
But how many? The only problem with that, Seb, is though. For how many years now?
Completely understand.
We continue completely valid. Back to 5 years ago, because it's something I'm guilty of as well. It's something you know. There's more than once I've written an article, sort of Tottenham are in crisis.
Yeah,
but
of course.
It's a
very, very
now,
valid point, Raj, and it's quite right. It's just a habit that I'm probably never going to shake because
next year, but 5 years ago, we'll still be in a decent team. We'll have been in the Champions League 5 years ago. It might even be 5 years
that's
ago
true,
now.
But it's not that I'm trying to use that as a context to create any real judgment. More just, fine.
No, I completely
forget about it.
You,
no
you
one's ever watching
it,
the highlights of that game ever again. But we won, we got 3 points, and the teams below us lost on that day. I mean, like City and Man United won on Sunday. But it was just like, we needed to win. And we needed to build a little bit of buffer ahead of Liverpool. Brilliant, you know. And we win, Arsenal lost. Great. That's about that. That's all I really care about. And sort of, you know, again, it would have been very typically old Spurs to Arsenal lose, Liverpool lose. We fuck it against someone that we should beat at home. And that we don't do that will always make me smile.
Yeah. I mean, we could have drawn again, which I think would have put most people on the edge of calling Samaritans.
Yeah,
after
exactly.
That Sunderland game. I think it's time we talked about Son, because I think because we talked about him every week from the start of the season after you said that you wanted him sort of hung, drawn, quartered, given to national service and invited to his funeral.
I wanted him sold. Yeah. Well, more than people kept like, there's a phase where there's all people would talk to me on Twitter about. Like, all I get, not even talk to me, they would just type Son and send it to me. And be like, yeah, he has a really good goal against Swansea. But, yeah. Go on then, ask away.
But yeah, we put a date on it. We said, because I think the last time I got bored with it was the last time we played Sunderland. And then we got a load of questions about it, and I said, we won't talk about him again properly until after the next time we play Sunderland, which was last time, which turned out to be an absolute shit show. But how has your feelings towards him gone? Because he's had an all right season. He's been scoring goals. He's been assisting. When he gets in the team, especially against shit teams, he seems to sort of contribute. I think he's undoubtedly had a better year than he did last time already. He gives us something else. And sort of without his goals, I think we'd be a poorer side. But where do you stand? Have you softened a bit towards him?
Because I think this season the high points have been better. And this season we've had he's more vividly portrayed just how good he's capable of being. But I mean, he's just a maddening player because okay, I'll give you an example. Man City, I was kind of, I was at that game and I thought when he came.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Came on at halftime. That was the right decision because we needed a little bit of We needed an aggressive response to that first half because we'd been very docile and looked very fragile. And he came on and he gave away the ball, which led to Leroy Sané's goal. Admittedly, you know, Lloris shouldn't have made his error, but still, it's another defensive mistake really from him. And then he scores the equaliser and a lovely finish. Great bit of play by Eriksen and Kane, of course, first, and a chance you'd expect him to take, but a really good, valuable finish nonetheless. And it was just, that kind of summed it up for me. He brings as much as he takes away. I mean, I watched the Chelsea game at Stamford Bridge. I watched it with Jack and Mrs. Jack in a pub in Earl's Court. And it just infuriated me because it was sort of the goal that Victor Moses scored didn't result from something that Son did, but was a consequence of him just not bothering to track a runner. And I just can't shake the feeling that he is one of those players that belongs at an Everton. You know, for a side who have strictly, you want to finish between 7th and 5th each season, he'd be great because you could deal with the sort of, he seems to have 2 or 3 weeks when he's great, 2 months where he's really poor, and then he sort of bounds between those cycles. And if he was less talented, I wouldn't care. If he was less talented, I'd be like, look, he's a perfectly fine substitute. You bring him on for 20 minutes at the end of the game. He's not a first choice at Tottenham because even with Lamella out injured for so long, he's kind of okay. He played against Borough, but with I think what we've seen so far is that what we've seen over recent weeks is that Pochettino's first choice 11 does not include either Son or Moussa Sissoko. Quite reasonably, meritocracy, completely fine with that. But you're an Asian player of the year. And we've seen what you can do. And this is not adjustment. This is not, I'm finding it difficult in this league anymore. This is a player that just fluctuates violently between two sort of very binary states. And I hate it. You know, I completely believe that he has a value to play, and I would love it if he, you know, 20 goal season and he showed exactly how good a player he is. Not every week, just maybe 3 weeks out of four, 2 weeks out of four. But it just, I don't know. And he just seems like a bit of a flat track bully to me, Rog, as well. Had a very, very good game against Man City at the Lane. Was extremely poor in the derby. Scored a goal against Man City, but was, you know, non-existent otherwise. I can't I can't sign off on him just because he scores, you know, the fourth goal in the 5-1 win over Swansea, or because he does a nice little bit of footwork against West Ham. These are fine if you are Nasser Chadli. But Son is an infinitely more talented player than Nasser Chadli. And yet they kind of, their contribution is relatively similar. It's that, you know, that thing with Chadli that you always used to say, that, well, he just scores goals. He doesn't necessarily play very well. And over 89 of his minutes, maybe not hopeless, but completely forgettable. But then he'll score a goal. And everyone's like, well, he's actually a really good player. He's like, well, is he? I mean, I don't know. I kind of, back in sort of, I think it was around September, October time, I thought, actually, I'm wrong about this. But then no sooner as I thought that, I remember being in the Man City game and thinking that, look, he's cured, whatever was going on, he's cured it. Brilliant. Fantastic. And then he wasn't seen again really until December, October, November. It's just, yeah. I just think we have better players, mate, more consistent players. And I don't like the idea, as with Sissoko, I don't like the idea that, you know, a player that we spent so much on and presumably employ at a very expensive rate sits on the bench and plays 15 minutes. I just think you have a right to demand more. And yeah, I see that attitude in almost all of our players. And he seems like a very personable chap, seems very happy-go-lucky, but maybe, I don't know, maybe that there's a cost involved in that. I don't think I've been unfair.
Okay.
I think it's actually a
more reasoned argument to make at this point of this season than it was at the start of his second season at the club. I think you've far more of a sample size. He's had far more opportunity, I think. I think he's been sort of played in games and in situations where he necessarily wasn't last year. So it's much easier to sort of evaluate his character than it may have been last year, because, you know, as we've seen many a time, the first year of a player coming to a club or try to fit into, especially a squad as tight-knit as ours, a league that's as sort of uniquely sort of separate as the Premier League to sort of judge the pace of and sort of get into tune with, not necessarily because it's of a higher quality, just because it's different. Sort of, yeah. Of its own. It's different. So that I'm always sort of reticent to do that to a player after 1 year. But I would say we're closer in thinking than we were at the start of the year. I do share those frustrations, mainly because of things I said before. Like
he can do brilliant things,
you know, scissor kick against Swansea, but he'll not score the one-on-one against Middlesbrough that could have, you know, we could have gone on to win 4 or 5 if he'd scored that, because they're not scoring a goal at White Hart Lane. And if their back's broken early, they mm-hmm. at some point they will have to push you out because they're desperate for points. And if they don't, if they just sit on their heels for the rest of the game, we win 1-0 and, mm-hmm. you know, that's that. But it's little things like that. It's sort of percentages. And they're areas in which I think, you know, because he is so young, because he still looks raw to me. He still looks like an unfinished product. I don't think it's necessarily attitude. I think it's naivety. He strikes me as a very young man for his age, even in his characteristics when you see him interviewed or when you see his behaviour around other players. And I think that is reflected in his ability on the field. And I think that if you were to sort of juxtaposition that against Dele Alli, who, you know, acts like a man, holds himself like a man, sort of, you know, he plays beyond his years, almost, in his position, sort of his positional senses of aggressiveness and stuff, sort of not of a sort of a lad who's just turned 20, whereas Son's got a couple more years on him. He just seems a little more sheltered and a little more soft, which I think can get on him. I think he might get in his own head a little bit. I think there is a little bit of self-doubt there with him. I'm not ready to sort of give up on him because, as you say, he's got so much talent.
Yeah, without question.
And there is so much ability there that there might be a penny drop moment, and he does give something else in that wider position that nobody else gives. Sort of the way he shifted his feet for those two penalties we've been discussing, no other player in our squad has that sort of, you know, level of control in close quarters. Or
I'd add Lamella sort of to that, and
the
probably
thinking
Ali.
To do that.
I think Ali's. I mean, I know there was a little bit of license with some of the way he went to ground a couple of times, but Ali's got that in his game, I'd say.
But he does it quite often. It's not as if it's a one-off.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's a skill to him, and he's got fantastic strike and things. So I see your frustrations, and sort of I see the fact that sort of his output has increased compared to last season, although that's not saying much. But there's still, I think there's still a player in there. You know, maybe it is a case where he needs to go and be the Billy Big Bollocks at a smaller club to learn that there's a player in there. I mean, I remember writing something a while back about Gylfi Sigurdsson, saying that sort of when a team is built around him and he is the focal point of attacks and things, that is when he will be the best player. But he doesn't hold the ability to be that player at a top flight, not a top flight, a top tier side. Sort of, he cannot be that man for a Tottenham because he's not as good as Christian Eriksen or Eric Lamella. He can't do that. Maybe he could do it at Liverpool, but they'd probably prefer it to be Firmino
or
Coutinho.
Like
He's not going to be. Yeah, it's not going to be at City. It's not going to be at United. So you know, the biggest club or the biggest, you know, sort of club that you could see a Sigurdsson going to is maybe a Everton or a West Ham, and he would be really good there. And you know, in that Everton side, he'd be an upgrade on sort of Ross Barkley or something like that, because he's a much more assured and complete player. And he does have all the talent in the world at the same time.
Oh, we're talking about Sigurdsson again.
Sigurdsson's talent. Yeah, but he'd be fantastic, and maybe that's the same thing for Son. Maybe he needs.
I still believe he needs. I mean, the reason I would say that he needs to be in that kind of team is because I don't believe he can defend, and I don't believe he works hard enough without the ball. And I think the point you made about Ben Davis earlier was in that I think if you give him a role on the side which doesn't demand anything of him other than just to be impactful with the ball at his feet or with his runs off the ball in the opposition half, I think he'd be an excellent player. But like sometimes, and I think we said this in the summer, sometimes the best player is not necessarily the right one. And I just the point about how well like Dele Alli copes, you know, how his maturity is developed at Tottenham. I think that seems to be a kind of hallmark of a lot of the young players we have. I'd say, okay, early days, of course, but Harry Winks has that little, like that shred of DNA, which allows him, you know, Eric Dier did when he first turned up. You know, this is not, I mean, okay, it's unique in football as a whole, but it seems to be more common in our side. And he is an outlier because, you know, he's young, but he's 24. I mean, he's not that young. He's not young enough where if he was an 18-year-old, you think, okay, you got some growing up to do. You got some, I don't know, whatever the process that occurs between 18 and 25 is, you got to experience that. Fine. It just seems like such an odd personality for this kind of team. I mean, our players are.
You know, here's the thing that I've noticed, and I don't think, thinking about it now, that it's a coincidence, is that, you know, when the club put out their sort of who you sit next to on the coach type things, the three that sit together are Ben Davies, Son and Wimmer. And I don't think it's any coincidence that they're the three players that probably come in for the most amount of doubt from fans. I think Davies is the least deserving of that because sort of his biggest crime is not being Danny Rose. But with the other two, I think it sort of their sensibilities maybe just don't fall in line closely enough with the managers. And sort of he's not a man manager in the sort of Allardyce Pardew mould. But there is a certain desire and personality and sort of tenacity to a man that you need to be able to be seen on a level with Pochettino. The reason why Danny Rose has done so well under him is because there's probably, you know, a comparable character to them both. There is a bit of naughtiness in them both. Danny Rose does like putting his foot in. No, he's from Doncaster, so he's going to be a bit of a shit. And, you know, Pochettino was no saint himself as a footballer. And, you know, he doesn't want his players to act like that either. We've seen that plenty of times from how they conduct themselves on the field. So, you know, maybe there is something
just
to be said for that.
Out that yeah, it's a... I don't know. I think we've said this an awful lot now, but it's the character that troubles me. It's not the talent. I mean,
the one thing that troubles me as well is that he's on record as having asked for a move away from the club this summer. And if it takes one sort of below par season for you to give up,
you don't want to use a word like soft,
maybe
because that's not really fair. I just think there's a naivety. Yes,
naivety.
But, I mean,
I'd
say that there's. You know, if you were doing the old Championship Manager football ratings, I'm not sure that Son would reach double figures for his determination in the general sense. It just, he seemed that he was so eager to quit so quickly, just thought, okay, mate. And he's played very nicely at times this season, and he's been a valuable part of our season, of course. He scored 6 or 7 goals, maybe 8, I don't know, but he...
Would we be any worse off, say, if Son had left the club?
Yes, I think so. I mean, he's been a valuable part of the season. But then Wolfsburg are willing to pay £24 million for Son. So what am I getting in return for that? Am I getting Wilfried Zaha? Or am I... I don't know. I mean, yeah, I know, but it's hypothetical. Oh. It's just sort of everything has to be evaluated as an opportunity cost, Raj.
I think that's that thinking from... I understand that thinking from the club in that sort of... towards the end of a window selling him, that's empty money because clubs will know that you have that amount of money to spend.
Nope.
So they'll not be looking for that. They'll be looking for the fee on top that you're willing to spend beforehand. So if you're offering sort of 14 million for Wilfried Zaha, they'll go,
yeah,
you've got 20
mate,
in your pocket from Wolfsburg.
But this
there.
Is
we,
a
we
universal
25
truth of the transfer market, mate. It's quite correct, but I mean...
But it becomes that you get to that Berahino problem then where you're spending above the odds for a player who is not worth it, and they will then be judged against that fee and they'll be on a hide and to nothing again. And it's a continuous circle of disappointment
game,
and anger that.
That's not
I
really about
buy
Son or Berahino or Zaha. That's just that is the transfer market. I mean, I just. Would we have been worse off without him this season? Absolutely. But everything has to be evaluated in, you know, in terms of opportunity cost. So if he'd have been sold.
So are you now glad that we didn't sell him in the summer? Would you have taken a worse season to have got rid of him?
I don't know what I think. I mean, I
think he's had a good enough year that money will still be
on
the table.
Yeah, I'd say I don't think his value has increased because I think all of the doubts that existed around him are still there. I don't think he's shown that he's capable of doing anything that we didn't know he was capable of before. He's just done a little bit more of it. But if someone was to say at the end of this season, you know, here's the same transfer fee, I'd still say, in my opinion, it would still be something to take. I'd like to be proven wrong. I'd like him to lead us gloriously to... all kinds of trophies and Europa League and Champions League wins and all that stuff. But I don't know. I tend to get a little bit of a feeling with some players about where their trajectory is and whether that's wrong or not or right. It doesn't really matter. It's just a kind of, you know, it's an impulse. I remember thinking that there was something in Lamella, just in things like body language and his application and kind of the interviews he gave.
And you know
and
how
I
much
do too,
I
but when you add
language.
It all up and you see it and you think, for whatever reason, it's an intangible. Whatever reason, you think, yeah, that's the player I want to persevere with. Son doesn't give me that impression. I just think he is.
You are the man that did once.
I did.
At the highest level for Tottenham.
You know what? If Son improves, he will be a Ballon d'Or winner. Fantastic, wonderful.
You'll run away.
And I'll eat all of my words. But
how many
goals? Has he got? I don't know. Don't see that at all. I think what you touched on a minute ago, mate, I think that Danny Rose and Song Heung-min are entirely different characters, reacting completely differently to the manager. And I think Rose's improvement is, something for which he should be deeply admired. I think he's been tremendous and sort of his recognition of what his failings were and Pochettino's ability to cure them. I mean, it's just one of the most dramatic, you know, kind of reclamation projects I've seen. And it's brilliant, but... I don't know. If someone say to me, forget what I think should happen, I'd be very surprised if Son is still at the club in 18 months' time. I think it'll, you know, this summer, next summer, I don't know.
Okay.
But in a way, it's kind of a peripheral issue, though, Raj.
Is that, I mean,
you've just got better players. I mean, it's kind of, you know, him and Sissoko is a bench player already, you know, 6 months in, will stay there, presumably. He'll never be a starter for Tottenham. And Son's kind of moving in the same direction. I just, you know, it seems kind of incidental now. Yeah, he's just not very
really,
he's what Until we he all knew on. He was. Everyone except Levy.
Yeah. I tell you what, one thing I have enjoyed with Moussa Sissoko is when he gets like an empty field to run into, it's glorious to watch him in full flight. When he's got nobody to run past or anything like that, he's fucking great. But
when you can run onto a ball instead of having to control it, that's also good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's gazelle. Like,
He is. I think we just have to laugh about that one now because
we
know it's a failure. So I mean, I don't think anyone would deny that.
Yeah. Let's have a look and see if we've got any questions. Nikhil Saglani says, would you rather see Leicester relegated then? Would you rather see Leicester relegated or Allardyce? Allardyce and then in brackets you put Pardew's mess. So I was half saying Allardyce and Pardew at the same time. Let me start again. Would you rather see Leicester relegated or Allardyce in brackets Pardew's mess relegated?
Palace.
I want to see Leicester go down. I think it'd be fucking funny.
No, I don't care about them anymore. I mean, it happened. Brilliant. I mean, it's not going to make me feel any better, so.
Oh, no, it won't make me feel any better, but I'll still, like, laugh at them.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, wait. No, it's not so much Leicester. I laugh at certain players. I'd like to see Jamie Vardy crying on the King Power pitch at the end of the season. I quite enjoyed that.
He won't cry.
Hand in a transfer request on the pitch.
Force a move somewhere shit.
A la Chimbonda.
He'll be a dickhead to him.
He had it in his sock, yeah.
No, he had it in his sock, didn't he? Have you ever seen Paul Jewell's sex tip?
Nope.
Have you ever seen Paul Jewell's sex tip?
I've never seen it,
but Google it. There's a screenshot of him where he's got some poor woman on the bonnet of a BMW and he's looking up at the camera with the most red face you've ever seen. He's clearly been like doing his 10x stable in his head for about 20 minutes trying to stop himself from busting.
Or see that in that blah.
Yeah. That's a picture for everyone.
That's ruined my afternoon.
There's another one. There's a picture of him as well where he's sort of like, he's got his hair down like in a matte mess. And I don't know why these are ingrained onto my brain, but they are. And he's just got his hand on some woman's hip and stuff. And she's got like stockings on or something. I remember they went around the internet a few years ago and everybody laughed because the last people you'd want to see in a sex tip is Paul Jewell. Is Paul Jewell, what's Paul Jewell doing? Shall we check in with Paul Jewell? Is he still in management?
On Wikipedia.
After his stint in, do you want to have a guess?
He's doing some kind of ropey consultancy work in some dreadful Malaysian first division.
His Wikipedia entry officially ends in 2012 when he was sacked as Ipswich Town manager. After less than a season, he took over as manager on 10th of January. And he was sacked in October. So he must have kept him up and then got sacked regardless.
Poor Paul Jewell.
At least he had. He'll always have Bradford and with him.
That Bradford thing was...
He was like, you're right as well, wasn't he? He was only about
5'10". I'll have you know.
With your Chelsea boots.
5'11 with those. Yeah. Edging close to 6 foot.
Onwoo says, any of you guys watch Designated Survivor? Any Netflix
recommendations? Yeah, I'll recommend watching The Fear of 13.
What have you been doing?
It's a documentary on Netflix. Yeah, documentary.
Oh, the documentary.
Really good. I can't say too much because it will ruin it. But it's about a guy who spent, I think, 23 years on death row. Very, very interesting. Very well told.
A good accompaniment to that would be reading any work Ta-Nehisi Coates has done for The Atlantic about the American justice system. Read anything by Ta-Nehisi Coates, but he's quite possibly my favourite working writer at the moment. He's with all the complex things happening in the world at the moment, I often find myself struggling to articulate my feelings on them, and then The Atlantic will tweet a link to the latest Coates piece and he's done it fantastically. He's written amazing things. Last year he wrote, maybe it was the year before last now, he wrote a fantastic cover story for them on the case for reparations, and he did a fantastic look back on Obama where he spoke to him a few times, called My President Was Black, which was amazing as well. And his book, his second book, Between the World and Me, was it wasn't stylized as such, but it sort of, he said it's after he'd had a son, he just wanted to discuss race relations and what it's like to live in the world as a black man, and it's one of the most powerful books I've ever read. It's fantastic. So if you ever want to, Ta-Nehisi Coates. I'm sure. I'm surprised you've not seen me banging on about it. I'm sure Moose has probably read it and stuff.
You're wondering if that's true or not.
I
can't quite be sure. Is he joking? No. Is he not? No, I'll never mute you, Raji. Never. Never.
No, mute me.
Oh, no.
I thought you were on about Musa.
Locked Musa.
No,
I haven't been. I'm going to have a cinema day either today or tomorrow when my work dies down a little bit. I haven't seen the new Trainspotting, which I want to see, and I want to go and see the Hacksaw Ridge or Split. I don't know.
All right. My Netflix recommendation would be Gilmore Girls, which is fantastic. I've just started watching it. I'm not even taking the piss. It's fucking great. I watch it with my mum, and we sit there and watch it, and I enjoy it. It's like Aaron Sorkin wrote a soap, and I'm not even embarrassed to be enjoying it as much as I am. It's so good that my hatred for Melissa McCarthy in any form is actually circumvented. No, like, she's in it, and I don't mind her. It's sort of like that.
Nah, but yeah, you lost me, Melissa.
I'd watch Gilmore Girls. I don't care if you're going to laugh at me.
Nah, not having it, Raj. Genuinely.
You'd get brownie points. If you stick on Gilmore Girls with your last
week,
there's
no point. She's away for the next couple of weeks, so it's just me watching Gilmore Girls by myself. There's no brownie points for doing that. We know this.
Yeah, but I know you watch Desperate Housewives on your own, so what's the fucking difference? Mate.
Desperate Housewives, gripping melodrama of the highest order. All right.
That's just you wanting to
Terry Hatcher. Nah, Terry Hatcher.
You're more of an Eva Longoria man.
Yeah, Eva Longoria, I'd say, yeah.
If you had to choose, if you're forcing me, then it'll be Eva. Come on, Eva, come round to Bath.
No, those days are over for me. The Eva Longoria days.
Like, you could even, like, in your, when was this everything?
Oh, yeah, mate, years ago before like I met you. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I noticed how you just try to think that those days are behind me. When did those days ever happen, dickhead? Sean Gormley says, a rundown of your favourites that you've seen of the Oscar nomination.
I don't care about any of it, mate. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know what's nominated and what isn't. I really like La La Land. Really liked Jackie. Thought that was very good. And yeah, I don't know. What else is nominated, mate? I haven't seen that.
Moonlight. And what's the there's something heroes with like what's her name? I can't remember now. It's annoying me. I'm gonna have to pull up the list. I actually do an Oscars ballot every year with my cousin. He's a director who lives in Canada. And we have a £50 bet every year on who can guess the most awards right at the Oscars, because we both stay up on Facebook, message each other across the world as they're happening. Whoever loses has to pay £50, sorry, to the other person's charity of choice. And I've won for the past 2 years.
Okay.
The pictures are Arrival, really, which is really Arrival. Good. Fences, which I really want to see. Yeah, Arrival was really good, yeah. Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, I've not seen yet. Hello, High Water was really good. Hidden Figures is the one that I couldn't remember. It's got like Taraji P. Henson and stuff in it. La La Land, Lion, which is that film about the kid who gets lost in India. Manchester by the Sea, which is really good. And Moonlight, which I still
What's
need
Moonlight
to see.
About?
But that's supposed to be really good as well. It's like a small film. I think it's like a indie. I'm not sure if he's gay or not in it, but it's a Barry Jenkins film, essentially. It's got the
guy.
Have you ever watched House of Cards?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's called Remy Mahershala Ali. He's the one who's got the thingy, but it's like it's split into loads of different timelines and stuff like that, I think. But it's one of those where I've purposely not read a lot about it, because I want to sort of, I really enjoy seeing films where the only thing I know is at most the basic premise, because I feel like even when people don't try and include spoilers, you still get a sense of the film that you didn't really want. Even like with something like La La Land, when it gets loads of hype, it sort of puts a pressure on you to either like the film or not.
You have to have a definitive judgment of it when you get to La La Land level. You can't just think, yeah, that was fun.
You know what? La La Land was such a good film that I was all right in overlooking the fact that the central premise of the film is that a white man could sing.
Yeah, but I think I was talking to Jack about this the other day. I don't think it was smart enough to be in any way trying to make any.
I think it's a complete misstep. And it's sort of heavy-handed.
At best, that was clumsy. I don't think it kind of warranted the 3,000-word Guardian articles that got written about it.
But as a jazz fan myself, and sort of, you know, it being one of the purest forms of original black expression, that is one thing that sort of stuck in my craw. In the film, but it was so good, and
I left that film with such a big smile
on my face that I was able to overlook it, and sort of, you know, in the world as it is at the moment, there are bigger crimes being committed that I can overlook one man's arty look at singing and dancing in Los Angeles. You've got to pick your battles and choose which hill to die on, and I don't think taking on a musical is the one that's going for, it's the
Led Zeppelin argument, it's the Rolling Stones argument, it's a kind of, I don't know, there are more egregious cases of this in history, and they've been around for a really long time, and a lot of the people angered by La La Land seem completely untroubled by any of those, which is disappointing.
I've really enjoyed it. When we went, I was going to see it. I was going to go watch it on my own, and then my mum said that she wanted to watch it, so I waited for her. And then, as we were about to leave, my sister was like, "Oh, what are you going to see?" So I showed a trailer, and she came as well. And she normally hates things that I tell her to listen to, because she's into fucking, you know, Little Mix and chart hits and all that sort of shit. Whereas I don't. We often argue about sort of taste and things, because I pick her up from school and things, I've got a captive audience essentially, so I'm trying to play her music and shape her pop culture into.
When you're waiting for her to leave school, are you singing the La La Land soundtrack?
No, we've actually been listening to La La Land the past couple along. Of drives home, but like in days gone past, I've played.
Oh, what Dylan's Desolation, right? Fucking great.
I've tried to get her into Dylan. I've played her like what do you call it? What did I have on the other day?
Okay.
Like Muddy Waters and stuff. Yeah, man. I'm trying to educate okay. her after her school, and she's like, "Oh no, can we listen to Beyonce again?" And I'm like, "No, I'm going to teach you here.
My car, you're listening to my music."
This got loads of swearing in.
Yeah.
Well, this is one thing that I always got told as a kid, as sort of, you know, when you've got your own car, you can pick the music, that's a rule that I hold very dear to my heart now. Let's finish this. Let's see if there's any more questions. If Levy sold the club to Trump, would you carry on with the pod? I don't think I'd be allowed to support the club if Trump took over. I think there'd be some sort of executive order
I don't even know how it worked, you'd be kind of excommunicated from the Tottenham Church, I suspect.
My membership would be
tickets that you bought wouldn't arrive, would be broken. You know,
I'd want to see what a solid gold football stadium looked like.
I think by the time Trump is buying Trump Arena, clubs, I think football will no longer be for me anyway. So we'll see.
We'll all be there at the rugby league.
Should we stop? Okay.
Here's a last question that's sort of not serious. And, you know, you'll have to cast your mind back. Max T says, what do you eat after a night out before going home on the next day? What was your sort of takeaway of choice, or what did you have?
No, I was never that guy. I was never an eat at the end of the night out guy. I was a...
Never
got hungry.
Pack of chips or something?
I just didn't.
Why not?
It wasn't my thing. You also don't get kebab vans on King's Road, so
I enjoy a kebab.
I tell you what, actually, that why
you know when you come, you know when you complain, right? When people like post things on Twitter saying I'm not going to listen to football from a man called Sebastian Stafford. This is
I do.
These people have a go at you.
Entire sincerity.
And then you cackle like a fucking witch. Mate,
that guy wouldn't quit, man. He went on for the rest of the day about that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, did he? I saw you.
No, no. That was the.
I was going to quote tweet it.
That was the only one of his tweets that I was sort of comfortable retweeting. I just thought, Christ, he went on and on and on. Language got worse, and it was all kind of I don't know. People kept sending it to me. I was like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that.
I'm gonna have a look at that
I used to enjoy it more because I used to be quite up for the ruck and sort of like, yeah, let's go back and forth for a little bit, but you just think it's not going to take you anywhere good, let's just move on.
People rarely argue with me, which is nice.
Nice, I guess.
So you didn't eat anything on a night out.
In all seriousness, I didn't. I just did that thing. I know a lot of people are different. I just never got hungry. Go have a night out, go home, smoke a lot, you know. Yeah, I was a heavy smoker when I was younger, so probably explains a bit.
Yeah.
It does indeed.
Because it does take your appetite away, doesn't it? I'm quite easy, really. Kebab, or if you're in Leeds, go up to Dixie's, and you're greasy and spicy and nasty. It's fucking cracking. The fucking shit you have the next day, mate, is something to behold. And on that note,
we'll leave it. Okay, and do the outro, Raj.
Yeah, sorry we've been away for so long. Jack will be back soon once work dies down a bit. We're busy men, as you can clearly tell.
It is the middle of a Tuesday.
I'm just fucking
Tuesday afternoon, and I've got one of my feet on my desk. Yeah, cannot move for the amount of work I've got on.
I'm still in my boxes. I've not had a shower today.
Ooh, lovely.
I'm just eating a cheesecake.
No. Jayna made me two different cakes before she went away. Yeah.
You're gonna
I've also got a gym membership, mate, so I'm okay. No.
You're just sitting in the sauna,
full cardio, mate. Yeah, look at the treadmill.
sit
on the rowing machine.
Rowing machine hurts after a while. I don't like it. If you want to listen to old episodes of this for any reason, if we not managed to put you off in the course of this, I'm sure go to rtrpod.com. We're on iTunes. We're on Acast as well if you've got that app. Jack seems to like it, so I trust him. Download that and listen to it.
That's the best.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @rtr_pod. Seb, are you at SebSB? No underscores or anything? And I'm Baines 13, but 13's in Roman numerals because somebody had taken the other one.
You know, a great plot twist would be
one thing I looked at the other day actually was the person who's just got at Baines is dormant.
Like me or
so, like, who do I contact about reclaiming that?
Yeah, you can have it, Raj, for £10,000.
What, at Baines?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I want it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.